Okay, Jerry. I'll take her in.
Right.
Attention. Captain of the crew, stand by to reverse polarity. Standard Class A security will be maintained upon landing. And until further notice, all hands will wear sidearms.
That is all. Artificial gravity off.
Grab off.
Half flux.
Half flux.
Cut primary coils.
Primary's cut, sir.
That sky.
Yeah, but I'll still take blue.
Okay, so that is the landing of something in the movie Forbidden Planet from 1956. Now, what was it about this that you wanted to talk about, Roxy? What are the points you want to make? Are you there, Roxy? We can hear you. Roxy.
Yes. Hello, Forsley.
Okay.
We landed.
What? Why? You couldn't hear me?
Oh, I had to get some of my notes. I forgot in the kitchen.
Okay. All right. So this opening, you wanted to start the Zap Hour with this scene of them landing on the Forbidden Planet. And I guess what's obvious to me is that this was one of the first uses of electronic music in science fiction.
Well, Forbidden Planet was the first movie ever with the, all effects and all soundtrack made with electronic music by a couple, Babe and Louis Barrett.
The couple.
Babbitt. Yeah.
Are they, Louis and Baby Baron, B-A-R-O-N.
Baron, yeah.
Right? Yeah, now, yes, are they students of Stockhausen or Webern or somebody? Like, who does that European composer tradition of electronics enter into this?
Yes, they were very serious composers, but this is the new phenomenon in the 20th century. We are all exposed to both the high art and the low culture, and we cannot separate that anymore. And that's the topic for tonight, how the activity we are going into, the erasure of the borders between art and science, take
right.
place with the help of all these science fiction memes and tropes
right.
that are educating us. We cannot longer separate.
So Zappa is watching, as a teenager, he's watching these movies and watching, and knowledgeable probably on the who's making the soundtracks for Hollywood. The composers coming out of sophisticated high art backgrounds are making soundtracks for silly, cheap science fiction movies. That has to, you're saying, influence Frank about how he wants to take his career. What is he going to do with his career? And later, he's always talking about making a soundtrack for movies. This movie for your ears.
Yes, and in a way, it's this idea of James Joyce, this, I think he calls that the monomyth, that everything we're doing, no matter how superficial or banal it seems, is part of this big odyssey of humanity. And everything is somehow an expression of this going back to our power, the big trouble we are actually into without being aware. And
the journey to the moon. McLuhan has a picture of these witches on planet Earth watching TV at midnight, and it's an image from an ad in the book Cultures Our Business, 1970, and he says going to the moon was a new suburban activity. The new suburbs would be the moon, I think is what he's saying. And somehow the people of the night, the witches, would be engaged in traveling to the moon via television. So it's a mixed media image.
Ion has been using also all these popular culture, science fiction, and memes and tropes to illustrate what they're trying to communicate with us. They're not using
right now
only the science and the high culture, but everything.
Okay, so that was Lewis and B.B. Baron doing the landing scene. I want to play a piece they made, Love at the Swimming Hole. I don't know if that's part of the movie soundtrack, but you sent it. Let's give another example of their work.
It's another work they had, but for me it was like Love at the Swimming Hole is the vortex we were talking about last week.
Right. Now you're saying Love at the Swimming Hole is not part of the soundtrack of Forbidden Planet. It's a separate work.
Yeah, but...
Right? All right.
Yeah, for me, that work, it's about the vortex.
Okay, let's listen to it. It seems to be showing them in... I can't stop it. Okay, there it stopped. It's showing them in a picture of them in their lab. Okay, so this is their own work. This is not used in this film soundtrack, but this is them as a serious composer, I guess. And it's called Love at the Swimming Hole. Yeah, I'll move it back just a bit. Thank you. Okay, so that was Lewis and B.B. Baron, B-A-R-O-N, Love at the Swimming Hole. I'm assuming that was created in the 50s. And the comments, first person says, these are pioneers of electronic music. I love the early sound and music experiments with tapes. Someone else says, I love this. Is any of this music available on CD? Then someone else says, Lewis and Baby Baron are the godparents of electronic music as we know it now. This piece here, and they give a piece, is from the soundtrack to the classic 1956 science fiction film Forbidden Planet. Then someone else says, this is incredible. Someone else says, look for Bells of Atlantis
on
YouTube.
This haven't been recognized because all this music created the whole science fiction landscape that became a cliché. All these type of sounds that we then were used to associate with these cartoons and comics and films. And
so they say, look for Bells of Atlantis on YouTube, and then someone else says, incredible, so advanced for its time. I'm curious to hear other music of theirs separate from Forbidden Planet. So if this was presented at a concert in 1956, they would have been booed out, right? Nobody would have thought this was pleasant. But now we've been mutated by so many landscapes of sound and tactile textures that this seems great to us now, you know, this 1960-year-old stuff. But it would not be popular was Stockhausen popular? Could he go into the Berlin Symphony and play this to an audience in 1960, and would they like it?
And that was one of the reasons Zappa said he didn't become a serious composer, because he was not... boring enough.
He wasn't
enough.
Go through that. He wasn't what?
Yes.
Boring?
Boring enough or
right. It was too boring
enough.
And it wasn't worth beating your head over an audience that wasn't going to respect it or be interested in it. So
the thing with electronic music is there are many things going on and you don't have a tonality or sometimes a rhythm, so people need these melodies and rhythm to sort of catch their attention. Otherwise, it's very hard for people to concentrate and really listen. That's the thing that Paulino Oliveros always said. You have to go into quantum listening and listen what's going on with the sounds and how the sounds are evolving. But, people were not used to that. It was completely new. And we can also see how it was also associated with this new fear of humanity, the hot fusion. The nuclear blasting.
Traumatized people.
Created a terror in all humanity. And technology had been since then associated like with Frankenstein horror, that it will somehow get out of our hands and we will not be able to control it, or that technology will surpass us and will be better than us and will somehow enslave us. And
which
that's
happened.
A constant.
Which did come true. It all came true.
Yes.
We are not,
that's a constant meme in popular culture and science fiction. And that's when all these monsters Frank Zappa love start appearing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting his use of the monster as an image of symbolism for all kinds of these environmental problems. It's a very good icon to use, the King Kong monster. So let me read you what McLuhan said about electronic music, or about what came after 19th century normal music. You know, music based on Bach's scales or whoever provided the scales that was normal. Here's what McLuhan says. Yeah, the tonality, the tonal scale, tone scale. What was the phrase for?
It's a harmony with a central tone, like you have G or
so. Here's
G or wherever.
Here's McLuhan. Here's McLuhan writing. Atonality. So atonality, not tonal. Atonality in music represents the abandonment of the central key, that is, of a single perspective or organizing frame to which all elements of a composition are related. So all elements of a composition are related to a central key, which is a central perspective or organizing frame. That is, tonality served as a figure to which to relate other figures in an abstract way. In the mosaic of acoustic space, however, each element creates its own space. So if tonality is acoustic space, so they are relating as a figure to a central key, so there's the visual center margin structure.
That was the idea of Bach, that the notes are like planets around the sun, and there is this important, the tonic, the central key is like the sun, and all the other notes have to revolve around this sun. But that was his translation of the power of God into music. So we wanted to make this interface with that idea of the power.
The Newtonian universe. The Newtonian universe. Yeah. But it says each element creates its own space. So each element, each note is a planet making its own space. But it must salute the central flag of the central key. Right? That's what it...
Yes.
They make
everything
space.
Evolving around that central key. That's the idea.
All right,
of the tonality.
So then McLuhan specifically parallels atonality to acoustic space. He says, quote, using atonality as an acoustic space, wherever you are at the moment is the key you're in. The tonal center is where you are, and the governing consideration is the nature of an effect on the overall pattern. The governing consideration is the nature of an effect on the overall pattern. Such space, the atonality space, is not uniform, but rather a multidimensional dynamic of figure and ground.
We're in a new galaxy beyond the Gutenberg galaxy, where everything is happening at the same time for no reason at all, like Frank Zappa said, and we have
and making their own
telescope
and making and their own spaces and making everything is in its own decentralized position and making their own space. So we're witnessing tones or tactile textures making their own space in Lewis and Baby Baran's music. This electronic.
We're discovering new landscapes that are created by machines. The machines are making sounds as they
new
are used.
New acoustic spaces.
And
new acoustic spaces.
Ideas of the Italian futurists. They wanted to use this. Also, Russians before the Italians, they were trying to make music with these machine sequences of noises as they were used, or this type of very repetitive that also became part of the mainstream music. We usually hear 2/4 beat music, and I suppose that's an effect of this, because before there was much more diversity. And then music became also like a simplified, like a loop, and with less complexity in the involvement of the musical ideas. It's just like a melody, a 4-beat, and 3 chords. And that's what
so
everybody
at the
liked.
Time. At the time of at the time of Baron doing this stuff, I assume in the '50s, okay, R&B and rock is taking over, which is a new meeting a new need, a new sensory mix of tactility that the TV screen, the black and white TV screen, is bringing in. So music is responding to a desire for deeper textures, rougher textures, and they found that in the blues, antecedents, Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker people. So the audience is responding to that, whereas the aesthetes are making electronic music, and they're still like conceptualizing or coming up with theory. They're still abstract and almost academic in what they're doing. They're like Frank's going to come along and mix what the Barons are doing with what John Lee Hooker's doing. He mixes.
Yes, that's the big thing with Zappa. That he sees how music is evolving into this, what Adorno was criticizing, that it's very stupid. It's actually just for proletarians to get some relax.
But Zappa didn't see it that way. Zappa, he didn't see it
that's how
in the opposite way.
Zappa goes and takes all these memes from popular culture and tries to make a more interesting music in all senses.
Yeah, without the divisions, without the divisions that Adorno had. So I just want to check to see if Bert came in. I just unmuted. Is that you, Bert? And another one. Is that you, Bert? I've opened two lines. No Bert. Let's see, Bert. I mean, what time is it over there? It's 5:45. Right? So he may be not up yet. 5:45 in the morning. Okay, so here I made a nice discovery this week in relation to what we're doing here. Carolyn Guertin, in one of her articles online, quotes an article by McLuhan called Art as Survival in the Electric Age. And it's based on a speech he gave at Columbia University to a group of undergraduate students on April 9th, 1973. Now, in light of all the things we've said, and we've done 60 hours of talking about Zappa so far, and at 6:00 hours, and we covered the Vortex and the Poe and all that. Well, I read this essay, and I had not read it before or don't remember reading it. It's an obscure essay that you can find in the collection that his daughter put together called Understanding Me, subtitled Lectures and Interviews. So on page 206, it has this pretty amazing essay, and this is going to, you're going to see it illustrating, in his terms, what we're talking about. So I'd like to read this essay. We'll go back to playing other things and dealing with the freakout list, but this is a great summary of issues we've been trying to talk about, Roxy, as you'll see.
Yeah.
And it explains what the questions and the issues and the problems and solutions that Frank is wrestling with. And McLuhan's right on the money here with the different things he brings in. So remembering, Carolyn, you brought up electronic music. Do you understand that you're not telling a story? Tonality tells a story, a melody. That's within a communication of matching. I'm going to tell you something, and you're going to be intrigued. Your mind's going to understand what I'm talking about, and you're going to get the effect I want on your mind. These guys, the electronic guys, are saying, we're not telling a story anymore. We're going to create new spaces. It's like Zappa's saying, I want to play it to find out what it sounds like. He knows they can make, with this new technology, new kinds of acoustic landscapes. Zappa goes a little further than these technical Stockhausen derivative electronic composers by bringing in movies and other cultural phenomena to mix in with the pure sound. So Frank's moving to synesthesia, whereas the Barons are just working with ear space and making new spaces from it, new landscapes. So McLuhan, knowing that, Let's see what he says. So he starts off, and what's good about this, Roxy, is he's talking about art as survival. Frank Zappa is going to offer modules of survival, capsules of vitamins, nutrition. He's always saying we're like a house.
That's a very crucial thing for humanity, since there is the hot fusion, the nuclear fear of being blasted. This become a real important meme, survival. And I will also just wanted to add before we go on that in the Forbidden Planet, you never see the monster of that planet. The monster is only a sound. When the monster is approaching, you only hear these weird sounds coming. And
I looked at it, quite important. No, that's pretty profound that they understand it's an invisible environment. And 2 points. First of all, McLuhan in the 50s is saying that television is far more dangerous to the human species than the nuclear bomb. So everybody is reacting to the figure of the bomb and paranoid and uptight about it. And Frank's saying, no, man, you guys are talking about a puny thing. It's the television that's going to wreck your world more than the bomb is. So that's an interesting point to remind people of, that McLuhan is saying TV is more dangerous than the atomic bomb.
Yes, he was saying the whole medias are the vortex that are
the real bomb.
More
They're
dangerous
the real bomb.
Than the blasting of the nuclear.
He called it the information bomb, and in the 60s he called the nuclear bomb, the atom bomb, an information bomb. So it's the information bomb as a multi-level meaning. And certainly Frank is wrestling with the information bomb, because he says that the mother's invention in the 60s, he said that we're like a household ammonia, household cleaner. You know, and he said we're not entertainment. He didn't say we're therapy. We're a useful consumable that will do you well. Much like Ion says, the RNA drops are. You're going to need this stuff. So Frank felt necessity is the mother of invention, right? They were there to provide a medical. He called himself Dr. Zircon all the time. A medical solution or input or effect that wasn't just mere entertainment. So, okay, so that's what McLuhan's going to talk about, art as survival. Frank thought that his stuff would enhance your chance to survive. So here's what McLuhan says. He begins, I propose to consider art as a liaison between biology and technology, among other things. And I'm going to venture to read a passage from the work of A.T. Simmons, Man's Presumptuous Brain. That's the name of the book, Man's Presumptuous Brain. This work indicates a certain gap in our equipment for which perhaps the artist was intended to close. So the artist, Marshall's going to define the gap that the artist closes up or makes more balanced. So Dr. Simmons is a biologist, and he says this. In man's pre-human ancestors, the close and harmonious coordination of cortex and brainstem was a highly satisfactory means of assuring survival and evolutionary prosperity, as it still is in all wild living mammals. But when, about 500,000 years ago, man began very slowly to embark upon the road to cultural advance, an entirely new situation arose. The use of implements and the control of fire introduced artifacts of which the cortex could avail itself for the purposes of living. Remember you're saying the close and harmonious coordination of the cortex and brainstem. But now, with the introduction of implements and the control of fire, these produced artifacts of which the cortex could avail itself for the purposes of living. These artifacts had no relation, however, to the organization of the body and could therefore not be integrated into the functioning of the brainstem. So the cortex could avail itself of these artifacts, like controlling fire, but these artifacts had no relation whatever to the organization of the body and could therefore not be integrated into the functioning of the brainstem. The brainstem's great body-regulating center, the diencephalon, continued to function just as if the artifacts were non-existent. But as the diencephalon is also the organ in which instincts are generated, the earliest humans found themselves faced with a very old problem in a new garb. Their instinctive behavior ceased to be appropriate in the new situations in which the vortex created by using artifacts. So the cortex is extending itself and creating new situations, but the instinctive behavior seems to be appropriate. Just as in the pre-mammalian reptiles, the new environment in the trees rendered many ancient reflexes pointless. The new artificial environment which man began to build for himself at the dawn of culture made many of his animal reflexes useless. So McLuhan quoted or referred to A.T. Simeon's book, Man's Presumptuous Brain, quite a lot in the 70s. And, of course, nobody was paying attention and not looking into it. But for him, it was a big support coming from biological categories of the issue that he thought the artist was dealing with. So the art is going to bridge the cortex with the brainstem. Carolyn, do you know anything about the diencephalon? What does this mean to you?
It's just an area in the brain. I don't know much about it. You could look it up and find its functions. But if it's instinctual, it's down near the brain stem, and that's sort of where total biology gets its references, where the body in instinct will always behave in a certain manner. Under stress, we go to our instincts.
Okay, so and these instincts are going to be inappropriate, and they're going to act on what they think of the problems are, and they don't recognize the new environments caused by the extensions of the cortex, the artifacts.
Not at all.
Does that make sense to you from your total biology knowledge?
Oh, I said you were talking.
No, I'm just asking Carolyn. Does that make that what we're describing here, Carolyn, is that what total biology is claiming?
Yeah.
That our brain stem is not...
We go back to the primitive.
And it's doing all kinds of stuff on your body that you don't know, and you need to understand what it's doing.
Right. You don't direct it intellectually.
Right. So the artifacts around us. Now, this is where I would criticize the total biology, that they didn't include the effects of the new media in their encyclopedic inventory of effects.
But you just said yourself, the primitive instinctual is separate from the new environment, and that's what total biology is based on.
Well, that's what Simeon says. Simeon doesn't say that art bridges that problem, that separation. So new media are new art forms that total biology doesn't acknowledge.
Correct.
They're still dealing with the A.T. Simeon's presumptuous brain scenario. But that's just a side thought.
Right.
But watch how McLuhan comes up.
It's important because until now, all systems were not complete. We were not considering all aspects of the human bodies.
That's right, not until Iondome.
Yeah, and Joyce and McLuhan see also Lewis that both art and technology are tools for survival because we need the technology.
Are what for survival? Art and technology are what for
tools.
Survival? What was the word?
Tools.
What, food?
Tools. For
food.
Tools. And tools.
Oh, tools.
Tools.
Well, they actually don't cause, they cause disruption. They don't cause survival. They cause a threat to survival because the brainstem doesn't understand what the new tools are for.
In a way, men think they're inventing things to adapt better to the environment, from fire and clothing and weapons to the newest technology. We always thought these expansions are helping us to survive, to adapt to the new conditions of environment. And art was the balance between, we needed this new perception that the artists were presenting as they were seeing the new changes of the technologies, the things that were invisible for
right.
most. We needed this balance with the with art. So art and technology are, since there is no more mutation, we needed somehow to evolve into this altering until
technology took over biological, replaced biological evolution, and the body didn't recognize the technological evolution that was happening around it. So we don't want to use technology and art together at first. Later, technologies, media, become art forms. So the environments themselves are the new therapies, but not the beginning. The artist is instinctive. He's going through some kind of complex clairvoyance and coming up with novels and plays and scenarios, stages of apprehension presented in various art forms that are meeting the stresses of the community, you know, in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s. They fail after World War II. Once the atomic bomb comes in, the arts fail to bridge the gap between the brainstem and the new evolution of technology. So this is what McLuhan is proposing. This is the radical idea, practical use of art. Now, he doesn't mean just any art. You have to get into what McLuhan means by art to say when he's talking about artists. Okay, so he quotes this guy, and it's a good quote. He never read, and he would quote a little bit from Simeon's, but I don't think he ever quoted as much as this lecture has. It's a good chunk. Okay, so then McLuhan comments on Simeon's. He says, this enormous gap between man's natural equipment, the biology, and his technology has gotten bigger and bigger. Bigger gap. I suggest that the artist's role is to fill that gap by retuning and modifying the perceptual apparatus that enables us to survive in a rapidly developing environment. Art provides the training of perception, the tuning or updating of senses during technological advance. Yeah. Now, here's the point. McLuhan doesn't mean, in 1973, when he's saying this, he doesn't mean what Zappa is doing, what Andy Warhol's doing, what Stockhausen is doing, what Broadway plays are doing, not even what Hollywood and Archie Bunker TV shows are doing. The media are art forms, but they're not the solution. The artist takes the computer and programs a global media diet with what he called a global thermostat. Now, that's a huge operation. But McLuhan is saying, he is the only artist, and he knows how to modulate the situation. And what people think is art is coming nowhere near it. Now, Frank wasn't on that huge level, but Frank is one step below that level, as shown in his play, Dio Fa. He knows how to orchestrate as a satellite conductor to show in his art the orchestration that's required. And it's already going on in Wall Street and in the intelligence agencies and the White House and the word that makes the market. Many artists read McLuhan in the 60s. Oh, look, he's celebrating us. And he was not celebrating your regular artists. They didn't know what was going on. McLuhan wrote way back in 1960 that all